Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, and I'm pleased to be joined right now by Doug Keck, President and Chief Operating Officer of EWTN. And Doug, good to have you with me. Thanks.
It's always great to be on with you, Al. Thanks for asking me.
Let me, because I don't want to, sometimes we get talking about things and then I forget to focus on some new things that EWTN is doing and our programming decisions that are coming up. I know you've got shows coming up on St. Benedict, Padre Pio, and Lord's Week. Tell us a little bit about them.
Well, obviously we have a docudrama on Benedict that is going to be airing tonight, and then we have a whole week of Lourdes with our friars, Father Joseph and Father John Paul went over there, so we produced a whole series of half-hour shows run all next week, and then
nice.
There's also that big pilgrimage event they're kind of doing electronically, virtually, and we'll be carrying that as well, happening next week. And if you can go to EW10.com, you can check out our /television. You'll get all the information on all the different programs we have going on. We've got a, you know, we're going to be having Padre Pio talked about on the Wednesday live show with Father Mitch and Colin Donovan. We got a video that one of our guys produced about kind of like a miracle of Padre Pio, one of the times where he bilocated and showed up in front of the Pope. And so it's a little segment. Wow. We're going to show that, which we're very proud of. And
yeah.
So we look forward to that. So that's just some of the material we have. And, of course, just always remind people that so many of our programs are available on demand. 25,000-plus programs, more than anybody else as far as Catholic. And
wow.
And we want to remind people also we're at 1.2 million and counting for our app, so people can check that out as well. So there, you can find us on Facebook. EW10's everywhere, as we like to say.
On-demand programming is becoming so necessary now. You go back when you and I were growing up, and you had basically three television stations locally that you'd watch, an ABC affiliate, an NBC affiliate, a CBS affiliate, and then there's probably, out of New York anyways, there was always an educational channel that we used to get.
Right, and a couple of others. There was Metro Media, WOR, and it was like three others because that was the biggest market. So,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. And we didn't even get those in New Haven, so, you know, 90 miles away.
But at least you get to watch the Jets or Giants games, which we couldn't see because they were blacked out.
Oh gosh. But it's amazing now because a person doesn't even have to worry about when something is airing, it's becoming the assumption that if it airs at any time, I'll be able to somehow get it on demand in
right.
the near future. How does that, I mean, does that change the way that you think at EWTN?
Well, certainly I think what we understand is that there is a linear aspect to life that people enjoy. And certainly I think for some of our older audience, that's comfortable. It's there. They know it's there. They can count on it there. It's the same way each day, and it moves through that pattern. For others, a lot of younger people in that who are have time differences as far as when they want to watch things, again, with DVRs and sling boxes and YouTube channels and everything now. Everything's built with the idea of basically having the ability of recording whatever you'd like, and if you miss it, you can probably find it. And, you know, it's kind of the attitude that we kind of had for the good or the bad of it right now, which is kind of I want what I want when I want it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Which kind
yeah.
of lapped over into the whole media, or maybe comes out of our home kind of multimedia experience. But because that's what people are used to, you have to make it user-friendly for the way people deal with their lives and with media. Otherwise, you get left behind. That's why, you know, sometimes I think people are always amazed at the amount of multi-platform material that people like us and even some of the stuff that you guys do, that we're out there doing that. They're thinking, well, they're clunking along with the old style, you know, they're showing the mass and that's about it. And then they go to Facebook and they see everything that's going on and being streamed in multiple languages around the world. They're always somewhat shocked.
Right,
and that's why
right.
We've always tried to get that out there, because the toughest thing we have, and I'm sure you've had it many times too, is the person who suddenly stumbles upon, you know, Ave Maria or EW10 and says, why didn't somebody ever tell me about this before?
Exactly,
And you go, well, we're trying. You know, sometimes you need to look maybe And you wonder yourself, why isn't this being broadcast throughout the diocese in the sense of telling people about it or this wonderful, wonderful treasure that's there? But unfortunately, it's not the way the Lord works, you know?
Yeah.
It's why EWTN's in Birmingham, Alabama.
which continues to amaze me.
That's the idea.
That's right. Yeah, this is the way the Lord does things.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you about a controversial topic, about Black Lives Matter, which there's no doubt that the phrase originates from a radical left-wing organization opposed to so many things that Catholics believe.
Right.
And yet the phrase has kind of drifted into the mainstream. Even the NBA is thinking of putting Black Lives Matter on the floor, off the court, but on the, you know,
right,
on the side. And if there's any audience that doesn't need to be reminded that Black Lives Matter, it's people who love NBA. I mean, everything from Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell to LeBron James.
Right.
You know, they know Black Lives Matter. But what? How do you go about, when you have a public controversy like mm-hmm. this, how do you think about it there at EWTN?
Well, I think the difficult thing for most people is clearly that we all agree that Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
That Black lives as individuals, as whatever you want to describe, a race or a group of people or people from a particular part of the world or whatever their tonality happens to be, of course they matter. The problem is it gets melded together with this organization,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of, in a sense, co-opted the concept where they get melded together. So people who are like, listen, of course Black Lives Matter, but I don't support this organization,
right,
and I don't support the riots in the street. I might support protests. I might support,
sure,
you know, reforming the police, but defunding the police is ridiculous, especially when you see what goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are forced to kind of stipulate and try to say, well, yes and no. But the trouble is, in the kind of cancel culture we live in today, every utterance that isn't done profoundly is jumped on. You know,
yeah,
you didn't say it quick enough.
Yeah.
You know, there's an old line from Charlie Brown when Lucy asks him, you know, you do think I'm beautiful, don't you, Charlie Brown? You know, and he goes, well, you didn't answer fast enough, you know what I mean? So it's that kind of idea that you get jumped on. And so what happens is people end up saying nothing. Or it's kind of like the organization, the Human Rights League, I think it's called, or something similar to that. Well, the group is really, the actual group itself is a gay activist.
That's right.
That's,
yeah,
really
Human Rights Watch, right.
Human Rights, yep, Watch. But everybody would say, are you for human rights? Oh, of course I'm for human rights.
Exactly.
You know, of course I'm for human rights. Of course I'm for Black lives. They matter. Hispanic lives matter. White lives matter. Just like somebody said to you, is White Lives Matter? You'd say, sure. But if there was some group, and maybe there is one called White Life Matter that's a white supremacy neo-Nazi group, you'd say, well, I certainly don't support them.
Right, right. Exactly. This is one of those things that we just continually have to deal with, though, because we don't control the world's vocabulary. And so we have to make these distinctions so people understand. I know personally, I don't use the phrase Black Lives Matter because I don't want to grant any moral authority to the organization, even though I know many people, good people, don't even associate the phrase with the organization. They're not even aware there was this there is this revolutionary leftist organization that has started started using the phrase way back around the time of I think George Zimmerman getting acquitted in the death of Trayvon Martin.
Right.
And yeah, so it goes back quite a way.
The Brown incident.
And then in Ferguson, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that was one of them.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it gets to be very frustrating to have to get into these fights over words. But words are important, so you try to distinguish them as best as you can.
Well, that's the trouble. You pointed it out. I mean, it's the Orwellian world we live in today where words have new meanings poured into them.
Yeah.
And so what one person means by that word is not the same as whatever anyone else means. And because we're living in a world that's anti-objectivism,
yep,
not in the sense of Ayn Rand, but
right,
in the sense of an objective truth,
yeah,
where everything is, as Don Lemon would put it, you know, besides the fact that Jesus wasn't perfect, the fact that he speaks his truth, and that's the phrase you hear today. Well, this is my truth. Well, what is your truth? There is only a truth. You might have a perspective, You know, it's like there was a movie years ago called Rashomon. It was a great Japanese movie where you know, there's one person tells the story of what happened, and then there's another person. The other person involved tells the story, and then they show you what really happened. And that, you know what I mean? It's that whole idea of, each one of them had their truth, but it wasn't true.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of Don Lemon, Jesus Christ, if that's who you believe in, he said, Jesus Christ admittedly was not perfect when he was here on this earth. So I'm saying to myself, well, you know, Don, you can have, you know, any opinion you want about who Jesus Christ is, but on what grounds would you say he wasn't perfect when he was here on earth? And when does a mainstream, a so-called mainstream broadcaster, treat the major figure in Western religion with such flippancy?
I wonder whether he would have said that about Muhammad.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think what they usually turn to, and you're the guy who looks through the world through the lens of the Bible, not me. I'm still looking for those lenses. Do you know where you can buy those? But the idea of, you know, looking at it and just seeing this kind of perspective from him, a guy who himself, who was raised Baptist and went to Catholic school.
Yeah.
So and had his catechism class and sat there talking to another gentleman who's an alleged Catholic. Who didn't say anything different. But usually I think they turn to Jesus getting mad at the temple. That seems to be the one where we can see
that's where they think
Jesus lost his temper, so he's not perfect.
Yeah, so he was out of control somehow.
Right.
Gotcha. So that would be the grains of sand in the Parthenon. So,
okay. Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's something else I wanted to talk to you about. Let me just pull up my notes. And I wanted to come back to this, the St. Benedict broadcast. When is that?
That's tonight. I think it's at 8 o'clock Eastern. But check out the web, EW10.com.
Very good. Doug, thanks. Great talking
no
with
problem.
You.
Thanks, Al.
Doug Keck, President and Chief Operating Officer of EWTN. Again, 8 o'clock tonight, St. Benedict.